laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
Rolling down the street, smoking in love, sipping on gin and juice.
Laid back.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 13, week 10, part 1. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson coming to us live from home this week.
Yeah, actually home this week. I'm not in an airplane. I'm saving that for this weekend where I'm going to be partying in Chicago before I drive up to Green Bay for Monday Night Football.
Well, that game would have been a lot more appealing a few months back. Do you have any feel on that game?
Well, it's the Lions minus 2.5. What's the progression of Hundley from game 1 to game 2? How does the play calling go around him now that they've gotten some live tape on him? Detroit didn't score a touchdown last night. I mean, all field goals. I mean, I don't know what to make of this game. I know I'll be intoxicated and probably with enough money on the Packers money line when I step into that stadium.
That Lions game made me sick last night. I mean, that was the the third most yards in NFL history without scoring a touchdown. Stafford threw for the most yards without a touchdown since 2012 when Stafford did it before. You know, they turned it over. They had a ball 4 times inside the 20, 3 times inside the 5, and they scored 3 points.
It really completed an absolutely perfect day that you and I both had yesterday. I don't think you could have been more perfect than what you and I did yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, we're essentially, the Super Contest is done. We went 0-5. That was my worst NFL day I've ever had. Although, I mean, I don't regret playing the Chargers. I don't regret playing the Lions.
Right.
I don't regret playing the 49ers. I mean, this is the second week in a row, my biggest NFL play, by the way, had 2 offensive linemen get hurt in the first quarter. I mean, their offensive line was a wreck. They had Staley go down. Fletcher Cox might get suspended, by the way, for what he did to Staley.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he's stuck in a hospital here in Philly because, like, he had deep injury or like something into like his orbital bone. And apparently, like, Fletcher Cox might have poked him in the eye. I don't know what happened, but then they lost. They were missing their other tackle, Brown, and his backup went down, and it got messy. And then they lost Jimmy Ward, their free safety, in the first half. They lost Garcon. They lost their first-round draft pick, the D-end, and I like that matchup. He went out with an injury. Just an absolute mess. Now the 49ers, they signed Jimmy G.
Yep.
And I saw that line tick down 2 points, even though they say Jimmy G is not going to start. Like, what? His presence is worth 2 points.
How's he going to know Shanahan's, you know, playbook in this amount of time that it's worth 2 points? That was crazy.
Yeah, that was my point. I don't think he's going to start, but even if he did, I would think that, you know, even though he's an upgrade over Beathard, like, in the long run, probably not necessarily this week if he only has 3 days to learn the offense. Watching the Broncos right now with the ball at midfield.
There you go. It's final, right?
Yep. Just went final. They needed 2 scores, so I was interested to see if they got down and then kicked a field goal to get it to 7.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is why you lie. If you're not comfortable with a number, you have to live bet it, because I just had a feeling all day that Kansas City was going to blow them out. That number was a juice 7. I didn't like Denver on the road. Waited until that first Chiefs touchdown, and then from there it was off to the races. 10.5, 13.5. 16 at one point, you know, so all those numbers cover if you were to bet it live.
Yeah, the Broncos are a mess. I mean, the Simeon experiment, I never believed in it. And I mean, they just went before that fourth quarter, I believe, they had, let me pull up the exact number. They went something silly. They had 19 points over their previous 13 quarters. I mean, they just, that offense looks bad. Maybe they can take something from at the end of this game, but they're in trouble.
I'm not really sure who throws a prettier interception ball between Trevor Siemian and Keller Chris for Stanford, because those two throw the most perfect interception balls I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's shocking that they're just rolling with Chris. They're not. I don't get that decision.
So like they every time I had to keep my finger off the damn live button for betting Stanford, because against Oregon State the other night, they would flash over to KJ Costello, and he was going over, picking up a ball and chucking it around. I'm thinking, okay, here we go. Let's get him in. Let's get the kid going. And it never came in. And meanwhile, Keller Chris is throwing it 3 feet behind his receivers, 5 feet on the ground in front of his receiver. He couldn't hit one guy ever.
Yeah, it's shocking. I mean, one thing that I will say, and this is, you know, this is part one of the Degenerate Juice podcast for those of you that are new, and what Colin and I do each week on the first part of the podcast, which comes out each Tuesday, we will talk about the weekend that was, what we learned, kind of recap the weekend. We'll get into the top 25 games, and, you know, maybe we'll talk about futures or, you know, where we consider certain teams to be for betting the rest of the year. And then we'll spend some time going through the weekday games, and we're going to start to get into some Tuesday and Wednesday action now. I believe over the next 24 days, there's a football game every night. Uh-huh. So it's a great time of the year. And then on the second part of the podcast, which will come out each Thursday, we really dive deep into the games on Saturday from a betting perspective. One of the things that we go over are three things that we learned from the weekend. And I'll just skip ahead since you mentioned this Stanford-Oregon State game. You know, we both thought that with Corey Hall, the new coach, that, you know, when they played Colorado, you had that new coach effect. But after watching, I watched most of that game. I really think that they're playing hard for him. And, you know, he has them believing and hungry. And, you know, he has the right energy and feel for that team. Just a vibe that I was getting as I was watching it. It might be something right to take away for future games in that Oregon State. The Beavers might have value going forward. Did you see anything there?
Yeah, I saw a couple things in that game. First off, Keller Chris is terrible, but we all know that. I don't know why KJ Costello is not playing. On the Oregon State side, I've said this many times on this podcast, I don't like backing teams that are worst in the nation in turnover luck and turnover margin, which is what Oregon State is. And then they come out in this game and they play a clean game all the way until the very end, where they fumbled and allowed Stanford to get it and score and win the game. But that's when I tweeted out the other night. I was like, you know, there's a reason why, you know, you guys are worst in the nation in turnover margin. And here it comes to bite you back. But, you know, for the most part, the entire game, they played clean.
Yeah, but let me counter that to you. So there, what makes up turnover margin, right? There's a couple different factors. Sometimes it can be luck. Sometimes it speaks to, you know, your desire as a team. And I think that before, they were just a dead team walking. And now with Corey Hall at the helm, I think that they're energized. And that translates into things like jumping on fumbles, not being lazy, carrying the ball.
Right.
I don't know. So I think that you'll start to see that improve, which in of itself is going to start to lend value to the Beavers going forward. Tough loss, though. I mean, they were right there. They had all those pass interference calls at the end.
But can he keep it up, though? We've also seen teams come out for the one-game coaching performance. I know we're going to get into Florida in part two, but for the one-game coaching performance for the interim coach that comes up, they play lights out, and then for the rest of the year, they never win a game. So it's interesting to see what Oregon State's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is two, though, so we'll see. Before I wanted to get into a recap of the weekend, we have to go over the Hog. So I had an absolutely epic roast. I was writing it down. I had a couple Hendrix and Tonics in me. I saw this Arkansas bet come through on the Sports Action app. I have people tweeting at us saying, wait, I thought we swore up Arkansas. You know that gif where it's the girl from Full House where she's like, I don't know. That was me. I'm like, I don't know why he's on Arkansas. And then I see they're down 31-7, 14 seconds into the game. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait to roast him. And then all of a sudden, it's 31-28. And then I'm like, wow, they're going to do this. And then Ole Miss extends to 37. What the hell happened in that game? And then what the hell happened in the morning?
I'll try to be as quick as possible with this. Late Friday night, Austin Allen got upgraded to questionable. So I started trolling all the message boards for Razorback Nation to find out what the hell's going on, because there was a chance Austin missed the rest of the year. There was a chance that he could play at any time. Bielema is trying to save his job. There's all kinds of things going on. But if Austin Allen plays, my thinking was, I'm the first person to see this news. This line is – he's worth at least 3 points to the line. So if I'm grabbing, you know, Arkansas plus three here and he's actually playing in the game, I expect the closing number to be pick or minus one. So he's questionable all morning, and I'm all over all the Arkansas beat writers. And there's Austin Allen. There's a video of him throwing 40-yard bombs at 9 o'clock in the morning down there on the field. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is great. I'm just going to let it go because Austin's going to play. Comes out, he never takes a snap. He's suited up, he's on the sidelines, and Cole Kelly has it the entire time. I mean, just by the blink of an eye, it's 31-7. I got Twitter hate coming at me all over the place. People telling me they're going to have to mute me the rest of the day and turn off my notifications. And I told my sons to go take their Razorback jerseys off. And I was like, we should probably go take a walk or go ride bikes. It was bad. It was really bad. And then right before the half, you know, we had a turnover. Ole Miss looked great probably there for the first quarter and a half. And then there's a turnover and got some points off of that. And then all of a sudden, Cole Kelly is able to not throw just Trevor Siemian type balls and clawed their way back into it. I've never. And here's the funny thing about all of this, as I'm watching, our kicker is one of the worst in the nation.
That's what I was going to say. You had money line too, so you
couldn't even get the. And we have the worst kicker in the nation, down by two. He was iced three times. I didn't even know that was legal. He was iced three times, and he still drilled the field goal, and the Hogs won. Bielema lives to save his job, and Wupik Sui Nation will be happy with a Liberty Bowl and probably six wins this year.
Yeah, that was just shocking. And you can in college, you can call three in a row if you want. So you escaped a roast. An epic
I was
roast.
Ready for you to. I was ready for you to tear into me. I know. I know.
So I wanted to also touch just on the World Series. Epic. One of the best games I've ever seen. Last night, there's been two games in World Series history that have had five or more plays, single plays, that changed the win probability by at least 25%. And both of those games have been in this series, World Series history. It was contagious. No one could get an out. And Kenley Jansen takes a loss. It's his first loss of the year, regular season or postseason.
Uh-huh.
Shocking. I have no idea what to expect tomorrow. I think it's good. If I know baseball in my gut, it's going to go under. It'll be like 1-0,
right?
After a game like that, and then you expect Verlander to gem. As long as Hill gets through the first, he should pitch well. He loves pitching at home. I'll probably be on the under. I don't think I could take a side.
I was gonna take up one of your little hot takes last night. I was going through the Twitter. I'm happy though. I mean, you and I are on opposite sides. I had the Astros from way back in February, but one of your takes was this is like the greatest World Series ever. And I'm reading this as a Royals fan, and I was thinking, you know, I thought the Indians Cubs topped what Bumgarner did against the speed and defense and low scoring 2014 seven games of World Series. Like, do you prefer this kind of World Series versus a 1-0 Bumgarner game seven? Comes in the fourth inning or what we saw last year with extra innings? And like, do you prefer this kind of World Series more?
Well, I mean, I did caveat it. So number one, I said that it has to go seven.
Right.
That's the requirement to be the best year. And then it depends on how it ends. So it has to have a good finish. Like 2001, the Yankees Diamondbacks, when
right.
they had a walk off against Mariano Rivera. Shocking stat, by the way. Well, I love Kershaw to death, but he gave up six runs last night. Madison Bumgarner has given up six runs in 36 or one run in 36 World Series innings. One run. Just shocking. I mean, that guy, he just gets it done in the postseason. And Kershaw, for whatever reason, saw a mirage of a St. Louis Cardinal or something. And then, but no, getting back to your question, I would say that I prefer a pitcher's duel. Right. So I prefer like Kershaw. I would love like a Kershaw Verlander 1-0 game. But right. the thing is, I mean, you can't not love that last night, the craziness or game two. And this has had this series has had a little bit of everything. So I'm expecting that you're going to have Kershaw spun a gem earlier in the series. So it's had good pitching performances. It's lacking any bullpen. There's no bullpens in this game now. I mean, I think the Dodgers bullpen is worn out. That game was lost last night on Roberts bringing in Morrow. I mean, his arm was dead. He hasn't pitched three games back-to-back-to-back games all year. Right. And he told him he wasn't going to pitch. He wasn't mentally ready. His arm was obviously shot, especially when you put him in there and you saw that his arm was shot. Jansen's arm even looked shot. Crazy series. I don't think it's the best ever now. It'll need a Dodgers. Like, Verlander will spin tomorrow, I'm assuming. Who knows with the series. But it'll need like a Dodgers close win tomorrow in a low-scoring game, and then a Game 7 close game. And then given what happened in 2 and 5, it'll be in the discussion. Still a lot has to happen for that, but two of the better games of all time. And I like pitcher's duels, but those games, I mean, just the amount of clutch hits, or is it bad pitching? I don't know, but the excitement level has been off the chart. So I'm looking forward to that game tomorrow night. I lean under, probably on the under. We also have tomorrow night, crazy sports night. We also have the playoff rankings, the first release of the playoff rankings, where everyone will overreact. Mm-hmm. What are you anticipating the playoff rankings will be?
Oh my God. Versus what I think is going to be in there. I think you're going to find Notre Dame in the top four. They don't deserve to be in the top four. And you're going to find a big pull of the who's who, the bookmakers and the pros and the touts and all that shit. They're going to tell you exactly what Notre Dame would be, an underdog to Alabama. So just put up with this Notre Dame stuff for a while. Notre Dame plays three teams in the top 25 in S&P Plus in the next, three of their last four games are against three teams in the top 25. They're going to wash themselves out. So I expect Notre Dame to be in it, but they don't deserve to be in it. Of course it's going to be Bama. Of course it's going to be Georgia. I'm interested to see where Miami falls. What is this? This is going to tell me if the committee is sharp or not, because they are undefeated. Are they looking at record? But if you go look at Vegas, what is Miami? Are they between 40 and 50 to 1 to win the national title? They're undefeated. So, I mean, obviously Vegas knows, you and I know that they're fraudish, but they're undefeated. So where does this committee put Miami? That's going to tell me a lot about how smart these guys are.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see where they put. I mean, you can't put Notre Dame ahead of Georgia, right?
No.
So, and you can't put them ahead of Ohio State, right? So,
no. But they'll be okay. So then you go.
You're going to put them ahead of Clemson,
Penn State, Clemson, Virginia Tech. There's a laundry list of one losses here. TCU. Right. So where do they rank inside of that? I'm really interested to see where they've. I just think there's such a note. This committee is going to find out a lot tomorrow night. I just think there's a lot of Notre Dame love out there. But like I said, this ranking is going to mean nothing. Nothing. Yeah. There's so much game left to be played.
Yeah, I agree. It could potentially present an opportunity for a futures bet, with the logic being that if there is someone either grossly undervalued or overvalued by the committee, you know, then from a movement perspective, okay, this team can't come from here to here, or, oh, wow, they value this team this much.
Right.
Small chance, but it's something that we'll definitely look at.
I'll say this because I'm writing the article for tomorrow. It'll be out tomorrow night after the rankings. The two easiest schedules by far to finish up with one loss is Penn State and Clemson. Now, whether Penn State can get in is a huge argument. There's a lot of people. It's a big talking point. But Clemson and Penn State possess the easiest path to a one loss for the remainder of the year. So I'm interested to see where they fall and what futures they would provide.
Yeah, for any Penn State fans listening out here, I believe I tweeted it this weekend. If Penn State beats Michigan State this weekend, and then Michigan State beats Ohio State, mm-hmm. which I don't think would happen, but if they did, they'd all have one loss. Penn State wins the tiebreaker to go to the Big Ten Conference Championship. The tiebreaker is overall record. And, you know, Ohio State, Penn State, if they beat Michigan State, they're going to win out. Ohio State would have two losses. Michigan State would have two losses. So Penn State would win the division in that scenario. Something to keep in mind. All right. Then we also have to talk about, I think he's my new favorite. Actually, I have two favorite players now. Greg Dortch is my guy. He had five touchdowns, I believe, or he should have had five, against Louisville. He plays Notre Dame. I mean, that guy's going to be – he's going to play on Sunday. He's going to be really good. I think he was targeted like 10 times and had 10 catches for five touchdowns, something silly. He also had a touchdown taken off the board because it got knocked out of his hands. Questionable call, and they called it a touchback. Anyway, but other is Khalil Tate. I mean, it helped that both of them helped me win bets this weekend. But Khalil Tate is absolutely – electric. He has some of the stats that he has hit, and his burst is next level. Number one, can he win the Heisman? And number two, what do you we can jump ahead to one if you want to USC, but does Arizona have a real chance to win the Pac-12?
You know, what's sad is the two teams that they've got to get through is Arizona State and USC, and they play both of them on the road, starting with USC this weekend. I've been scouring the internet for Khalil Tate Heisman. I've been all over trying to find Heisman odds on this kid, and all it is Bryce Love and JT Barrett talk. I'm telling you right now, if they beat USC and they beat Arizona State and then he beats Bryce Love, I'm trying to find odds, because I've looked at the rushing defense explosiveness on their remaining schedule, and I don't know who's going to stop this kid. I mean, I have this in my favorite game in our recap. They average 11.5 yards per play. Does anybody realize what that means? Like, every time they snap the ball, they average 11.5 yards against Washington State. That's mind-blowing. My mind is still blown about this kid.
Yeah, I mean, just to give some stats on him, I mean, he rushed for 840 yards in October. No one's rushed for 840 yards in October in the last 10 years. That's running backs included. Since he became the starter in 3-plus games ago, he's rushed for, like I said, 842 yards exactly on 58 carries. That's 14.5 yards per carry in 3-plus games. He doesn't qualify for FBS stats yet because he missed the first 2.5 games. Once he does qualify, he just has to play this week, he'll be third in the nation in rushing. I mean, it's absolutely silly what he does. And he's just fun. He's must-see TV.
Somebody has to offer some Heisman odds out there on this kid. I mean, I know that there's – everybody says, well, you know, Bryce Love this and JT Barrett that. But if they win the Pac-12 and it's beating Bryce Love, it's worth a bet.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. He had – Lamar Jackson won the Heisman last year, had 6 runs of 40 yards last year in the whole season. Tate had 8 in October. I mean, it's just silly. He's won Player of the Week 4 straight times. And – I think the only other person to, I mean, Bo Jackson did it 4 times. I mean, that's the category that we're watching right now. I mean, granted, there's a lot to go, but he's that exciting.
That and Herschel Walker are sacred names in the college football world.
Yeah. So I believe that Khalil Tate has the same rushing, like right around the same rushing yards as Lamar Jackson this year on 90 fewer carries. So. It's crazy. I could go on and on, but he's must-see TV. We'll talk about that game some more on Thursday. So let's get into the recap. Favorites on the weekend went 25, 28, and 3. Overs went 27 and 28, so pretty much split right down the middle. There wasn't many shocking upsets, so it was a pretty straightforward weekend. The last couple weekends we've had a few – you know, large, straight-up underdog wins. And, you know, we had some, but not as many as we've had. I think the biggest ones that we might get to are Houston eliminating South Florida. Pretty much their season's done now. Do you have any thoughts there with South Florida? Are they done? I mean, are they going to even show up?
Yeah, I mean, this was our only hope to – I mean, if you were wanting UCF to not be in the discussion – South Florida was your only hope to get them beat. Although we might have a chance. We'll talk about it in part two about UCF for this weekend. But yeah, South Florida season shot. You know, they still have a chance to win the AAC and go represent in a bowl. You know, I'm not surprised. They had holes that could easily have been exposed. And Quentin Flowers had a tough time with that, the new pieces of the offense this year anyways.
Yeah. And we also had Air Force. They're close to around a 10-point underdog. They won. Penn State came close. We'll get to that game. And Texas State, didn't I tell you Coastal Carolina shouldn't be an 8-point? I think that line got steamed. Texas State beat them by 20. That's what you guys played this week, right, Coastal Carolina?
Yeah, we did. The Chanties.
And
you're missing a big one.
UAB, right?
Yeah, UAB is a double-digit winner. You're missing a big one here. Like UNLV.
UNLV over Fresno is so shocking.
I've gone through this box score 100 times. It's not UNLV beat them in yardage. There was not a turnover discrepancy. This isn't a fraud box score. UNLV literally shut down Fresno State. I have no clue how.
I don't know. Yeah, Fresno finally. So the teams that were undefeated against the spread, Fresno and Georgia Tech pushed, so they're still alive for degenerate national champions. They pushed late. I know you weren't a fan of that. But Fresno lost, and I stay undefeated in FCS-FBS matchups on the year. Austin Peay, you know, wild one. Gave up 80 and still covered. That game was insane. And then the three teams that haven't covered all year, BYU, they win and cover. Tennessee, they covered, but they lost. And Georgia Southern, I think they snuck in the number. I think they covered by a half point. So I believe that there are no teams left that have not covered. It's really just Georgia Tech with the potential to become 2017 undefeated degenerate national champions.
See what happens when you're undefeated? You fire your coach and you get to cover the spread the next week. Georgia Southern.
Yep. Okay, so before we get into best, worst calls and things of that nature, I do just need to throw a shout out to Kansas. Fuck Kansas. I knew it. I told everyone, put all your money on it. There's no way they don't cover. I didn't bet it. I wish I bet it secretly, but I didn't. And, of course, they come out and score in their first possession and lose by 10. And so, there's nothing more predictable than that result this weekend.
Everybody listening, 21 total yards Kansas had against TCU. That was negative 25 rushing. They had 482 yards against Kansas State.
I don't want to talk about it. Moving on. So to the recap for the weekend, let's start with favorite game. I have to go with my preseason national champions. Not really. I just say that for anyone listening. Who now are on pace to get us my favorite win total of the year, Northwestern, Pat's Cats. It was just a wild game. They almost broke my heart at the end. Sparty came, big moose on the under, by the way. That'll be in the moose piece tomorrow on the Sports Action app. But Sparty came back, converted a fourth down, and scored a touchdown in the final seconds. And then it goes to overtime, and then double overtime, and then triple overtime. And I'm sitting there with a plus 1.5, and I'm having nightmares as soon as it goes. I'm like, it's going to go triple overtime, they're going to lose by 2. Uh-huh. But luckily they had the ball first to start the third overtime, which is huge, because then you have the other team score 8 and then risk that. But they end up winning 38-31, and Northwestern got us a cover against second straight cover in overtime and back-to-back weekend. So shout out to Pat's Cats. What was your favorite game of the weekend?
Yeah, I love that one. It was in the CW9, so I was chewing my fingernails on the end of that one. Mine, I'll be quick because we already talked about it. Zona plus 3. They won 58-37, all on the back of Khalil Tate. Zona averaged 11.5 yards per play. And that was another big weekend for me in the column. So I was happy with that one.
What did you end up in CW9?
Six. Well, I thought it was 6-3, and I might be counting the last minute Clemson push, because I had 14 on that game. So it's either 5-3-1 or it's 6-2-1. So I'll have to go look. But it's been 3 out of the last 4 weeks. It's been a winner, and I think the one loser was like 4-5. So it's doing pretty good this year. Someone asked me for my record in it, and I said, well, it's up more than it's lost. And I actually went through and tallied it all up today, and it's like 42-36-2. So it's definitely ahead.
So keep it up, and we'll get into the stretch run here. And best call of the weekend, I'll keep this quick since I already mentioned it. I got to go with the FCS-FBS special, the Governors, covered throughout. And, I mean, they were giving up kick returns for touchdowns, then answering with kick returns for touchdowns. Just an absolutely nutty game that I wasn't expecting. I was like, yeah, I think they'll stay. It'll be like 50 to maybe 73-33. Austin Peay had 355 yards. Central Florida had 489 yards. I mean, you wouldn't expect 73 points, but there was just all kinds of crazy scores. Austin Peay only punted the ball 3 times. Central Florida punted once.
There's no way they get in the playoff. There's no way they get in the playoff with that.
I mean, yeah, the sad thing is this should have been a game against Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. which would, you know, outside of the weather. But, yeah, I mean, Austin Peay gave up a kick return for a touchdown, and then they fumbled it, you know, inside their own 5, and Central Florida recovered it for a touchdown. And I was like, oh, my gosh, here we go. And they were down 21-7. And then they just started answering, and then it became a shootout. I was like, what is going on here? But Central Florida finally didn't cover. Central Florida actually finished. Milton played in the second half, which I didn't expect. They actually finished on a 21-0 run in the fourth quarter, which I thought was surprising. But that was my best call. How about you?
Best call of the weekend? I'll probably go with I already said Zona was my favorite. I had my worst call of the weekend ready to go. Can I just jump into that?
Yeah, we'll go with Arizona for your best call, because that was just never in doubt. What was your worst call?
Worst call is easily Tulane. You know, I went back to the well again with them, and you know, the problem was is I thought there was going to be some really heavy bad weather in Memphis, and there was. And then it all cleared out 30 minutes before kick, and my argument was that Tulane is has a running game that Memphis can't stop, and Memphis has a passing game that Tulane can't stop, and I thought the weather would affect Memphis. I liked the spread where the number was, and Tulane plus 11 never had a shot. The Memphis D shut them down. They only had 123 yards rushing. They had 2.4 yards per carry. So Memphis is on fire, and I think Tulane has been scouted well enough, and some teams have seen the option enough to where it's just you're not going to be able to pull the wool over them. So worst call of the weekend.
Yeah, I'll go with Baylor. It was embarrassing to watch that game. They lost 38-7 in a horrible spot for Texas. They made that kid, Shane Buchel, look like a hero. I know he had a great year at times last year, but I wasn't expecting 38-7 in a horrible spot. Baylor hasn't won a game now in over 365 days. So that was a bad loss. I thought Rule would have his boys ready, but guess not. 38-7 there.
And Kansas is getting pounded right now. Are you going to jump on the Kansas train against Baylor?
Fuck Kansas. my bet regret for the weekend to the game that I wish I bet but didn't. I don't know how I missed this. We talked about it all week, and the line was going up, so I was waiting, and then I missed it, and I didn't bet Maryland. I liked them at 4. Could have got them at 7. Great spot, and they beat Indiana outright.
Yeah, so I was going to say Arkansas because you know, that was going to be the biggest bet regret of the weekend, but they ended up winning straight up. So I'm going to say that my entire NFL card was a bet regret because I should have just stayed in bed instead of waking up to bet the Browns. But let's talk about things I don't regret. I don't regret betting Ohio State. They spotted Penn State, I don't know, 17, 21 points to start the game. I mean, I don't regret betting Ohio State, and I would do it again. Just because, you know, they had to come back from a tremendous amount of mistakes. And I wrote it in the CW9 too. They're like the worst penalized team in the nation. So Urban Meyer, they won the game and they might win the Big Ten, but with the number of penalties that they have and how much they set themselves back, I mean, they're their own worst enemy. So I don't regret betting them because I think they were the most talented, but they spotted Penn State too many points.
Total yards in that game, 529 for Ohio State, 283 for Penn State. But Urban Meyer, they were clearly the better team and should have covered.
Right.
But, I mean, kicking to your future Heisman Trophy winner, Barkley, the beginning was – and you weren't ready for him. And then they kept throwing these wheel routes and, like, little wide receiver screens that weren't working, and they kept going back to it. That couple decisions that I was questioning Meyer, who remains unbeaten against the spread – excuse me, yeah, unbeaten after a bye. He's a really good against the spread record, which took a hit, but he's unbeaten after a bye since 2001 when he lost to Ben Roethlisberger when he was at Bowling Green, I believe. I was surprised with some of the preparation for Ohio State, but they were clearly the better team, almost outgained him by 300 yards and escaped out of there with a win. Was there something else you didn't regret you wanted to mention?
If anybody followed me on the Sports Action app, I had Western Kentucky. They were up 28-20, and they were cruising against Florida Atlantic and then just committed turnover after turnover after turnover and gave up a whole bunch of points and ended up losing 42-28 to Florida Atlantic. So that's going to come up later. We've got something to the cliffhang on here for Florida Atlantic coming up.
Florida Atlantic's offense is rolling, by the way, and Lane Kiffin's an easy target, but, you know, I have to give credit where credit's due. Their offense has been playing well. Granted, who are they playing? But so the three things learned, I'll make this quick. I confirmed that Ville quit after watching that Wake Forest game. At Oregon State, I think, might have life and value going forward, as I already mentioned. And the other thing I learned is I need to stay far away from Utah. I mean, they got ran in Oregon, and they went up to Eugene, and that run defense gave up 350 rushing yards to Oregon.
Wow.
I mean, where did that come from? I don't know, but they've lost four in a row. Hundley played in that game, too, and his numbers, I mean, they lost that game 41-20, and Huntley was 25 of 43, 300 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, but they couldn't stop the run. Burmeister for Oregon, he finished 9 for 12 for 40 yards, but they ran the ball for 350 yards against Utah, who's, that's apparent, you know, was supposedly their strength, their run defense. So there's something up with Utah. I don't know if it's a team chemistry issue with the quarterback changes back and forth, but now that their run defense is in question, so that Arizona State home loss wasn't just a fluke, I'm thinking.
Right.
How about you?
Yeah, I'll be quick too. Clemson, in my opinion, is back. They were up 24-3 on the Jackets. A late TD with 4 minutes left made it a push when Clemson was covering. Kelly Bryant went 22 of 33. He hit 12 different receivers. So 22 receptions to 12 different receivers. Pretty impressive. He rushed for 67 yards at 5.6 yards per carry. Iowa State, it's been a hell of a run. I've loved it. I've made some money off of it. But they've now been outgained 3 of their 5 conference games. And their conference wins, they've had a 9-2 turnover ratio. And I just don't think that's sustainable. It can't last forever. And I think maybe this weekend against West Virginia, you might see some of that catch up back to them. My last one is BYU, just shy of 600 yards, a good run pass balance, almost 300 apiece. They were given 5 turnovers by San Jose State, but they averaged 6.8 yards per rush and 8.7 yards per pass. And Tyler Mangum, 18 for 34, 283 yards, 3-1 TD to INT ratio. So the reason I bring BYU up, they should just be a side note at this point of the season. They are 2-7. They finished the season Fresno.
Stop.
Fresno, UNLV, UMass, and Hawaii. They can bowl at 6-7. They're 15-point dogs of Fresno this week. Just keeping my eye on it. That's all.
Now I'm going to get back on BYU after they cover. This is a disaster.
Sataki is feeding them just spoonfuls of you can make a bowl. Can they even make one at 5? And are you eligible at 5-8 to make a bowl? What's that rule? Got to figure that out.
Depends on like other schools, and then you're. I mean, I'm sure BYU has a good API or whatever.
Yeah.
But it depends on a number of different factors. I think at any record you almost can make a bowl these days. I mean, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. They beat East Carolina, who you have to have as one of the worst teams from a power rating perspective, right? In the country.
Below 125. San Jose State's, yeah, god awful, the worst.
Who do you have worse, San Jose State or East Carolina?
Let me bring it up.
They got it close.
At the very bottom, if I read from 130 up, it'd be UTEP, Texas State, Georgia Southern, Ball State, Kent State, San Jose State. So I got San Jose State 125th.
Okay. Yeah, they're bad. If you get blown out by BYU, you're bad. I can't believe now we're talking about BYU. All right, anyway, let's go back. Let's go through the top 25 rundown. Oh, also to give a teaser for Thursday's podcast, one of the games we'll spend some time on, it's a game everyone is a little extra interested in, especially down in SEC country, is Alabama-LSU. Here's a trivia question for you. Who's the highest ranked S&P Plus team that Alabama has beat this year? No, look.
I'm not going to look, but I do know Mississippi State's going to top that, whatever it is. Mississippi State will top them when they play them. Fresno.
Yep. How about Power 5? Highest ranked Power 5 team they beat?
A&M.
Ole Miss, number 70.
So let me add on to that. I've been sitting here stewing like a mother on this Bama stuff. S&P Plus, here's their schedule for the rest of the season. I'm not going to give names. I'm just going to give numbers. 29th. At the 16th rated team, and then NA because it's, I think, Mercer, and then at the 10th. So at 16 is Mississippi State, and at 10 is Auburn. I mean, and then even if they win all that, they're going to get a top 5 team in Georgia.
I think they're as good as everyone. It's just interesting that they haven't, their schedule's been that easy. It speaks to how down the rest of the SEC is right now.
It's about to all change, though.
Agreed. I just think it's an interesting point. I don't think, I mean, I'm fully on board with the fact that Alabama is clearly the number one team in the country. But well, yeah, we'll get into that 21-point spread in that game, largest in that series since 1993. Top 25 rundown. So teams that took care of business, Memphis, you mentioned. Oak State got a cover from the CW9. Good work there. Wisconsin, I mean, that offense was ugly to watch, but they gave us another loss for Illinois. Clemson beat Georgia Tech by 14. Georgia, USC bounced back with a big win over Arizona State. Thoughts and prayers if you had that under, pick six late, similar to Cowboys Redskins. Washington bounced back with a big win. Notre Dame looked impressive again against NC State. Central Florida beat Austin Peay. Mississippi State goes down and beats Sumlin. It's time to fade Sumlin now, and we'll talk about that Auburn game on Thursday. Va-Tech rolled. Glad we stayed away from Duke and Oklahoma. Somehow had a 12-minute, 70-yard drive to close out the game without scoring, and that game went under by a point. And so those are teams that took care of business. And anything worth mentioning with any of those teams?
Nope. All good to go.
Teams that escaped. Stanford barely escaped. Miami, again, needed to fumble against North Carolina. Good God. Ohio State, as everyone saw, against Penn State. Take anything away from those? Or
it's just another day in the life for Miami. That's what I took from it.
Insane. And then the two teams who, you know, I think are now officially out, obviously USF is done, and TCU went down to Iowa State, which we have been calling for the last few weeks. Any commentary on any of those teams mentioned or any other games that we didn't cover from the past weekend?
No, I think we're good to go in the next segment.
Okay. So last segment we'll go through is the weekday games, and we will start with Tuesday Maction. We're going to start to have Tuesday games when you're listening to this. Games are tonight. Bowling Green at Kent State. Kent State's a small home dog, catching about two. Miami of Ohio at Ohio. Ohio, both teams off a bye, obviously, on a Tuesday. Ohio's laying 9.5 at home. They do have Toledo on deck one next Wednesday. I don't know how much that means, but anything here on Tuesday Maction?
Absolutely, yeah. This is big. Kent State's going to be a play for me. I'm waiting for it to get to three. Hope it does. It's clipped up to 2.5 on Bookmaker. Kent State is 2-6. They have an outside shot at a bowl. Pretty rough schedule, though. I mean, but it's still 2-6. They're eligible. Bowling Green has nothing to play for. 1-7. Kind of a lost season. Kent State has really big advantages from the defensive efficiency side, telling me the Bowling Green's offense is going to have some real problems moving the chains. And Kent State protects the ball much better. I'll take that team. I'm going to wait to hit the three. So by the time you listen to this tomorrow, check it out. It might be still be floating between 1 and 2.5, but I'm definitely playing at three. As far as Ohio goes, Ohio needs this win to keep pace with Akron for the East Division. Miami of Ohio is 3-5, and Ragland's questionable. I mean, he means everything to that team. And they need three of their final four to go to a bowl. This is about the time they turned it on last year, but I think they caught a lot of teams on surprise. Ohio's 9-1 straight up in this series. So, you know, I'm not suggesting a tease or a money line play or anything, but I just don't foresee a Miami straight up win at the Bobs here tomorrow night. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to be looking for a way to play Ohio.
And Wednesday we have more action. Central Michigan at Western Michigan. Western Michigan, home favorite, just under a touchdown, I believe. So do you see anything with the Broncos at home?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to take the chips. I'm going to be on Central Michigan here. Western Michigan has lost their quarterback, John Wasink. And, Central Michigan has a fabulous defense and limiting explosive plays. I mean, it's one of the biggest gaps in all of college football this weekend. So I don't expect Western Michigan to pull off anything big against Central Michigan. And then listen to this. Western Michigan, we don't really know who they are as far as the MAC pecking order. In their division alone, they haven't played the top three teams. They haven't played Central Michigan. They haven't played Toledo. And they haven't played NIU, which is the three best teams in that division, all still to come. So I think Central Michigan's going to get them tomorrow night. I've already played it. I actually played 7 before it dipped down to 6.5 earlier today. But I still think 6.5 is good. I've got this number actually, I think, at 5.5. So, yeah, go ahead and roll with the chips.
More action on Thursday. Probably the best under-the-radar game of the entire weekend as far as conference meaning. Northern Illinois at Toledo. Toledo's offense has been rolling with Woodside lately. Toledo's laying 8.5. This is for first place in the division. Both teams in the MAC West are 4-0. Toledo's 7-1 overall. NIU's 6-2. NIU's losses. They lost at home to BC to start the year, which doesn't look as bad. Game they probably easily could have won. And then they lost at San Diego State again in the game they probably should have won. And the Akron, Toledo's only losses to Miami at Miami. What do you see in this game? Anything?
Yeah, I got Toledo at 10.5 for this game. So it's obviously above the dead number that's floating on right now. Toledo has a major advantage in defensive explosiveness, much like Central Michigan. So I don't expect NIU to really get any big plays off and going. And plus they've swapped in, I can't even name the quarterback. There's so many quarterbacks that come in and get hurt there and end their careers at NIU. But it's popping around the dead number. I would love it if I could get it maybe down to a 7.5. But I'm playing, you know, if it gets to 9.5 and I start seeing some 10s pop, I'm definitely going to be on Toledo in this game. I think it's interesting that Toledo's win last year was the first time they had won in this series in maybe 8 years. So, you know, maybe it's time for some payback, but definitely Toledo's my side.
And even more MAC action during the week. I believe every MAC game the rest of the year is during the weekdays. I think I've read that somewhere.
Right.
Ball State at Eastern Michigan. You and I talked about Eastern Michigan before. I mean, they've lost the last six games by a total of, or the last six games have been decided by 21 total points. They've lost three times in overtime. They lost at Army going for two, down one at the Bell. They've been heartbroken. They've been a covering machine. Mm-hmm. They played one of the worst teams in the country in Ball State, who's just decimated with injuries. The question is, do they quit? Does Eastern Michigan like, oh, I'm so tired of this, and do they just come out flat? Or do they just beat Ball State like a drum like everyone does?
They deserve to drum somebody after all these close games they've had. So this number, 24, is way too high. My power ratings, I had it in Sunday Morning Coffee at -18.5. S&P Plus updated their rankings last night. This game would be -14.5 on their books. But this doesn't take into the fact that Ball State's on their second quarterback, and he's doubtful for this game, and their star running back, James Gilbert's out. So, you know, I don't know how much you adjust the point spread up for them having a doubtful second-string quarterback with the first-string quarterback out and their star running back out. They have nothing to play for. Ball State's their season is completely over. So, you know, does EMU hammer them, or is this come close to the number that some of the projections have? I'm going to stay out of the game. I'm going to stay away from the game. I would play it live if I happen to get Eastern Michigan at 14, but there's definitely not a live number I would ever play Ball State at.
You can't touch Ball State right now. Navy at Temple. This seems like a game that whole world will be on Navy. I don't want any part of Temple, but Temple's +8 at home. Any reason to back the Owls?
Yeah, but I found a good stat for you. So both teams are off of a bye, and we finally found Temple's floor, right? We waited like 7-8 weeks to find it. Temple may have motivation for a bowl game. They have an outside chance to make a bowl game, and that becomes very important this time of year. And bye weeks become very important this time of year, too. So both teams off of a bye.
Temple who doesn't have motivation for a bowl right now? It feels like everyone just can get into a bowl. This is crazy.
Even BYU. Right? Yeah.
I mean, they lose seven games in a row. Now they're going to go to a bowl. What the fuck is this?
Bowling Green's out. We can say that. Bowling Green's out. All right. So
the one team with bowl in their name, they can't even go bowling.
And, you know, they're in Muncie, too. That blew my mind for. Or no, I'm sorry. Bowling Green is in the same city as Western Kentucky, right?
All right. Bowling Green's in Bowling Green.
Yeah, but Western Kentucky's in Bowling Green, right?
Different.
All right. So
hold on. Bowling Green is like, so the actual college, Bowling Green, that is different than Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is where Western Kentucky is, right?
Right. Where the Hilltoppers killed my 17 parlay if that was going to like buy me a new car. Yeah. All right. So yes, I think you're right. I'll have to go through and look at it, but
yeah, Western Kentucky is in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and then Bowling Green, the MAC school, Bowling Green, is not located in Bowling Green, Kentucky. They are located in, I want to say Bowling Green, Ohio. Yeah, Bowling Green, Ohio. Okay, I was right.
I didn't even know there were two.
I was talking myself in circles thinking that I was going to be wrong. Yeah, so Bowling Green's in Bowling Green, Ohio, and then Western Kentucky's in Bowling Green, Kentucky. So anyway, I digress.
Okay.
Great. Anyway, I don't know how so
somebody listening is going to correct us. I know it. They're going to pound on. I had some guy all over me about not pronouncing App State correctly. All right. So the Temple number, I'm going to be on Temple. It sounds dirty. It is dirty. Both teams off their bye. Temple just came off of a loss to Army by 3 points and had plenty of prep against their option. So now they're going up against Navy, which, you know, is a triple option. It's a different flavor of a triple option, but still a triple option. And as I dove into the Army game, I thought, well, Temple only lost by 3 points. They obviously must have had really good success rate against defending the rush. And sure enough, Army only had 41% rated 41% in success rate in rushing, which is, you know, if you track any of those numbers, that's not a very good number at all. So Army, you know, using the triple option, couldn't do anything that they wanted to do against Temple, and Temple held their own defensively, and here they are playing the triple option again. So as dirty and as stinky as it sounds, I'm going to be on Temple in this game. It's sitting on a dead number 8. I'll wait to see if it gets closer to 7, gets closer to 10, make a decision, but it's going to be Temple.
Yeah, while you were rambling about Temple, who I would never play, so I tuned you out, Bowling Green actually has an acclaimed national title in 1959 in junior college. Football. Maybe, I don't know. 1959 Bowling Green National Championship is claimed. I just read it. I don't know anything about it. Let's see. Bowling Green National Championship. I mean, they might not have been like, yeah, here we go. The 1959 Bowling Green football team was an American football team. Their fifth season, the Falcons compiled a perfect 9-0 record, 6-0 against the MAC. They won the MAC championship. Outscored all opponents 274-83. The team was voted by the U.S. Press International Board of Coaches as the 1959 National Small College Champion. The team was inducted as a group into the Bowling Green Hall of Fame. Okay, whatever that is.
There's a Bowling Green Hall of Fame?
And there's apparently a National Small College Champion. I don't, it says source needed, but it's from an article in 1959. Who even knows if that's legit? But anyway. So you'll be on Temple. That's gross. I don't want any part of Temple. Idaho at Troy. What a game. Troy laying 18. They're down in Alabama for this game. And they're hosting the Vandals, who are from Moscow, Russia.
we can go in.
No, they're from Moscow, Idaho, but they're traveling down to Troy. Troy's laying 18. Do you see anything here?
Yeah, I'm taking the under here. Idaho's last 4 out of 5 been under. Troy's last 5 last games out of 6 have been under. My number, I have an equation for totals, and I've been tweaking it for 3 or 4 years. But what it does is it takes snaps per game, and it factors in yards per point. And, you know, you put all that into a pot of stew and you mix it together, and it says that this number should be 49. When I believe it's actually sitting at 51 last that I saw. So I like the under in this spot. Troy has the number one defense in the nation when it comes to red zone scoring. So if you get within the 20, you're most likely not going to convert any points. They're number 3 in the country in defensive finishing drives. So finishing drives is that stat. What does a team do once it gets past the 40-yard line? Well, Troy's number 3 in the country at keeping people from scoring. So I'm maybe Troy. I don't think Troy can score 51 by themselves. But I don't see any way Idaho is going down there, and there's a whole ton of points being scored in this game. So I'm taking the under.
Okay, and that'll wrap up Thursday. Troy, alma mater of DeMarcus Ware and OCU Manure, for what it's worth. Friday, we have 3 games on the docket. Marshall, we meet again. Marshall at Florida Atlantic, your Owls, and oh my gosh, you have your Owls and your Thundering Herd playing each other. What the hell are you going to do here? Florida Atlantic laying 9.5.
Brought a barf bag up for this segment. I'm going to be on Marshall this game.
No way. I got to bet Florida Atlantic then.
I mean, I don't even know how I'm going to tweet this podcast out with Bowling Green and Marshall and shit.
Wow.
Marshall, my number's 5.5. S&P Plus is 6. FPI is 4.5. So we all agree that this is... should be well underneath a touchdown. You know, staring at it now, it's 9.5 nines for the Fighting Kiffins, and that number is just way too high. The teams are almost exactly equal in efficiency and explosiveness. The box scores from last week are very sneaky. Marshall beat themselves. They outgained FIU, but they gave up 3 net turnovers, and they lost by 11. you know, FAU is the complete opposite of that. Western Kentucky gave FAU three turnovers, and the Owls were outgained by Western Kentucky. So we're talking about two fraudish box scores, you know, one for FAU and one against Marshall. Now they're playing each other with an inflated Florida A&M, Florida Atlantic spread here at 9.5, which should be below a touchdown. So by far, I'm going to be on the Owls. Maybe the public's going to be all over Kiffin. I'm not sure. I'd like to see a 10, but like I said, it's like all these other games. If it's on a dead number, I'm content to just sit and wait, because to me, there's no difference between 9.5 and 7.5.
Yeah, it is, to be fair, I do lean Marshall. It's a good buy low, sell high spot. You're really fading FAU's, you know, they're really artificial results, and you're buying Marshall after, you know, a really bad loss to them. Like, they're going to come out obviously motivated. I'm still not a believer in the Owls. And Marshall beat you. Marshall owes you. They beat you two Fridays ago. Maybe they'll get you back this Friday. The other game on Friday, Memphis at Tulsa. Tulsa laying 12. Catching 12 at home to Memphis. Memphis, as you said, is rolling. See anything here?
You see, this is one of those point spreads where I don't know if the number's being shaped by a group, because I have the number at Tulsa plus 14. S&P Plus has it at 12.5. So obviously the number is closer where S&P Plus is, but you just think like what Memphis has been doing to teams lately and how bad Tulsa is. Memphis is most explosive in the nation. Tulsa allows, you know, the most explosive plays. So obviously you would think Memphis would beat them by much more than 12. There's a lot of the early tickets are on Memphis, but the biggest money so far has been on Tulsa. So I'm wondering what's going on. This line looks like it's being played around with a little bit. I'm not sure if it's going to go to 14 and clip 14. The only stat that I could find in Tulsa's favor after digging through all of this today is that in that finishing drive stat, remember that's what a team does when it gets past the 40-yard line. Tulsa offensively ranks 28th. So when Tulsa gets past the 40, they do pretty good at scoring. And I was kind of shocked to see that Memphis's defense is 116th in defensive finishing drives, which means once a team gets to the 40-yard line, Memphis really just kind of lays down and lets a team score. So that is good news. If Tulsa can get to the 40-yard line, they're going to be able to cover this spread. But this one's still out on the jury. I'm not sure if I'm going to take part in this.
And I know a game, the last game of the week, on Friday is a Pac-12 special, one of the grossest Pac-12 games. UCLA at Utah. Like I said, I got to stay far away from Utah. I'm not in a rush to bet UCLA on the road. Utah's laying 5. You staying away from this?
Absolutely staying away. Is Josh Rosen going to play?
Is this season
what's going
on with Utah? Can't touch this game. So thanks for running through the weekday games with me. Look out for Colin's future piece, which will be out after the announcement of the college football rankings. Look out for the CW9 on Friday, six pack on Saturday, Sunday morning coffee on Sunday. And we will have part 2 of this podcast where we'll really dive into Saturday. I mean, the cards are going to start to get really exciting. So we're looking forward to going through all the games and hopefully providing you guys with an angle for, you know, to help support a game that you like, and hopefully we can have another upcoming profitable weekend. So we will catch y'all on Thursday. Cheers.
Peace out. Some sequins gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now it's time to